Bulls play in Washington. NHL, the Blackhawks host St. Louis tonight. And former Marquette basketball coach Rick Majerus has been elected to the College Basketball Hall of Fame. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Wednesday, April 3rd. Sunshine for the morning, clouds for the afternoon, a high of 53. Now 33 Racine, 31 Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to a more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers is available at carthage.edu/admissions/transfer. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. In part one of today's program, we're going to be talking about all that is offered at the Racine Heritage Museum and a big event that is coming up for them that is a major fundraiser. They're swinging into spring, a fundraiser on April 27th. And in part two, we're going to be talking with Dr. James Kinchin from the Music Department at the University of Wisconsin Parkside about 2 exciting collaborations that they have coming up over the next couple of weekends with area high school students in Kenosha and in Union Grove. So we have a lot to get to. But first, let me introduce my first 2 guests for today's program, Chris Paulson, who is the executive director of the Racine Heritage Museum, and Jim Wardrip, who is on the board there and one of their busiest volunteers. And gentlemen, good to have you back on the morning show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
It's a busy time for the Racine Heritage Museum, especially as you gear up for this big fundraiser that is coming up. And we'll talk about it in just a second. Chris, I wonder if you could say a word about kind of the central mission of the Racine Heritage Museum, the kind of story or the central story of Racine that it seeks to tell.
The central focus of Racine Heritage Museum is that we are the professional custodian of the material culture, the history of Racine County. Our job is to showcase and celebrate everything that makes Racine County great.
And among those many things is all the innovation that has occurred in Racine. Maybe you could say a word about the spirit of innovation that is part of the Racine Heritage Museum.
Racine County historically has an amazing mix of just the diversity of its people and the diversity of its products and an immeasurable impact on the world stage. Looking at the community even now and kind of taking a little survey of all of the global headquarters of manufacturers that are and have been located in what is essentially a rather small community. It's a story. It's so hard to bend your mind around it. When we start to think about that, one thing, fractional horsepower motors, invented in Racine, in the universal fractional horsepower motor invented in Racine a little over a century ago, and some 250 individual manufacturers employing that fractional horsepower technology over the past century plus. And most of these are little garage industries, but some are huge. And Oster, Hamilton Beach, names like this that are household names that come out of this community. It's just a staggering story.
It really is. And you do your best to tell that story in a really vivid way. Tell our listeners, particularly for the sake of those who have not ever been there, Tell our listeners about your building.
We have a collection in our care and our trust of some 200,000 objects and over a mile of linear feet of original source documentary material in the archival collection. We're able to share elements of that in a 12,500 square foot building located at 7th and Main Street. It is the former Racine Public Library. The museum has been in operation there since the early 60s. We are able to provide three floors of exhibits. We keep things fresh. We keep things turning around. And the museum is free and open to the public 6 days a week.
I don't know how much you want to get into this today, but there was an article in the Journal Times not too long ago kind of about the distressing lack of space that I know is a kind of a perpetual frustration for you when you, given all that you have that you could be displaying, but with severe limits to space and the fact that there is no way to expand except, I suppose, upwards, which I don't think would work out too well. So tell our listeners what your hopes are for the future in that regard.
Right. Well, it's no secret. It's a longstanding strategic goal of ours to get larger, newer quarters. There are so many pieces of the museum's collection that rarely see the light of day that are attractive and important, really help us tell the story of this gigantic manufacturing and innovation story that we just kind of touched on a minute ago. It's a story that's really hard to share in an appropriate way in a facility in the size we're in.
And especially I was thinking when it comes to some of what you have that is just such sizable artifacts. I mean, if this was a marble museum or, mm-hmm. or something in which we're talking about small little miniatures, that would be one thing. But when you're talking about an archive that includes automobiles and farm machinery and things like that, I mean, I can well imagine how you long for a truly adequate space to showcase it.
Right. Well, in the past 18 months, we've brought a fully restored 1927 Case automobile back to Racine. It's in the permanent collection. We're able to share that in a couple of different ways, but we can't get it up the stairs in the building to share it with anybody. We also, just last fall, brought back a fully restored 1894 Case reverse flue steam traction engine. It's one of three known to exist. It's the only one that's got all its parts. It's beautiful piece of machinery, and that is in storage currently. We're going to try to get that out at different events over the years, but again, it doesn't have there's no permanent place where it can be seen by the public.
Right. So, are your efforts active efforts to kind of seek out and pursue the possibility of a new home, or are you more in kind of a waiting and wondering and hoping mode?
We're in a preparation mode. We are taking a very careful strategic course to develop our operation right now, to seek ways of becoming sustainable and beyond, to the point where we can really actively make that pursuit.
Right. Very good. How long have you been open at this current site?
The museum has been open at this. They opened in May of 1962 at this current site.
All right. So it's been more than 50 years then.
Yes.
Yeah. Jim Wardrop, and you've been a very important player at the Racine Heritage Museum for a long, long time. How long does your association with the museum date?
Probably about a week and a half. Well, off and on, probably 5-6 years or so, or maybe even more. When I was at the Journal Times, worked with the director, the prior director. Chris was about 4 years old or something
right.
at the time. But we've been working real hard on a lot of projects. One of them is we're going to be doing our heritage walk, or our heritage walking tour again. And this will be the third year. We will start on June the 8th and run through September 7th. And it has really been an eye opener for us. We're getting a lot of people from out of town coming to the Racine area. They make a trip to see the JWACS buildings, and we fit in just perfectly there. But what strikes me the most is that the people in the Racine community, many of them just have. You'll be walking down, you talk about something, a building or whatever, and telling them things such as Racine was the fourth largest harbor on the Great Lakes at one time. And or they'll look and they'll say the first automobile was Dr. Carhart started an automobile, invented it, was named the father of the automobile in Paris. You just say these things about Mary Todd Lincoln walking down the street back and forth to see friends, and again, that history is people walk away with that knowing more about the community, which is kind of fun. Where our courthouse is quickly the first high school in the state of Wisconsin was there. And then you tell people that 50 students in Racine, at the Racine, going to school in Racine, 50 of them were in the Civil War, and you say there's like 24 of the kids were from in elementary schools, and people go, you're kidding me. And they needed drummers and they needed flag holders. So it's a neat thing, and we're excited to start it for our third year.
And when do those begin again?
It'll start on June the 8th and run through September 7th. It will be, and it's a rain or shine deal, and all you have to do is call the museum and get a reservation, and then we go off. It's about an hour and a half walk, but it's pretty much level. And at the end, we do a wind sprint. And so it's we're excited to get that started. And we're also really excited to have that second event that we have, the Swing in the Spring event, which the first year, I think, was very, very successful, and people came there and saw slides of Racine during the 20s and 30s, and this year it's going to be in the 40s.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about the Racine Heritage Museum in part one of today's morning show with Jim Wardrop, who is a loyal, devoted volunteer there, and Chris Paulson, who is the executive director. Yes, indeed, you do have this major fundraiser coming up on April 27th called Swingin' Into Spring. So, Chris, tell us a little more about what gets offered up on this big night.
Oh, this is going to be fun. It's a follow-up to last year's big band dance that we held in February called A Night at the Speakeasy, which, as Jim mentioned, was a 20s theme. This one is going to be at Memorial Hall in Racine. It's going to be a 1940s themed event. We've got the Jack Farina Big Band coming in with a wonderful vocalist. Patty Lund will be joining us for the evening. We have loads of really cool artifacts that we're going to be sharing with people from the 40s, particularly the story, emphasizing the story of wartime production. So, you know, as we talk about this sort of wealth and diversity of manufacturing that characterizes our community's history, you know, one thing that really stands out is the number of Army, Navy, E awards that were given to Racine and Racine County producers during the World War II effort, and all of the retooling and you know, the changes in manufacturing that took place as a result of the war. And so we're able to share some of those collections, again, from this vast collection that we can't really get out in other ways. So people that come are going to see some really cool stuff that was produced in the community. Lots and lots of cool documents that are, you know, from deep in the museum's collection from that period, and tons of photos. We're also working with some friends from the Racine Area Veterans. In fact, got a meeting later today to kind of talk about working with the USO to bring in some more fun into that event.
Ah,
and so this is going to be a really good time. It's, on the 27th, again, people can contact the museum at any time, but it's open to people 21 and older. It starts at, I think, 6 p.m. and runs to about 11. And costume and is absolutely encouraged.
Oh.
Period dress. We'd love to see people just get into it.
The other thing is Jack Farina was a music professor at Beloit College. And throughout his years, he's always been around big bands and that type of thing. And throughout the years, he has collected the arrangements from all of the big bands from 1920s up through the 50s.
The original arrangements.
And he's a real fanatic for that. But you go out there and it's 19 pieces, and you go out and you listen, and you're going to say, this is Tommy Dorsey, or this is so-and-so. And you don't get to hear that stuff much anymore, let alone a big dance band.
Right. Well, and in such authentic fashion.
Yeah.
And I can well imagine how Memorial Hall is a perfect space for this, and in part because I'm guessing the Memorial Hall is roughly the same vintage as the museum's building. I mean, it just kind of feels, and it's kitty corner across from it, so.
Yeah, Memorial Hall, well, it was built in 1925. The museum, our building was built a few years earlier than that, but they're close in style, and
right.
they do look good together. Yeah.
Very good. Chris, when you were talking about some of the things you want to showcase, did I hear you correctly use a term like E-Award or something like that? What were you exactly talking about there?
The Army Navy E-Award was given to manufacturers who just did an outstanding job of producing material for the war effort. So Twin Disc, as a very good example, developed a clutch for landing craft during World War II. These clutches were used all over the world, and really helped win the war.
So the military, in other words, said, maybe put out the call that we really need such and such to be developed by somebody, and then somebody would step forward and manage to do it?
Yes.
And
of course, then Twin Disc engineered these specifically for incorporation into landing craft that were built by another company. I don't recall the name of that. Case did bomber parts. Jacobson produced something called the Norden bomb sight, which was engineered elsewhere but produced by Jacobson Manufacturing.
Fascinating.
Massey Ferguson made tanks.
Wow.
All in Racine.
Interesting.
And gold medal that started in World War One. Prior to World War One, they were very active in COTS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the camp gear, but things that were needed in tents and the whole bit. But
so you'll have some of these kind of items and artifacts actually be on display
as
part of this.
Yeah, as much as we can get there.
Right. So Swinging into Spring is on April 27th, and I saw that there is plenty of information on your website as well for people who want to know even more about what's going on and what's offered up. Is there anything more you want to say about Swinging into Spring?
Good food, also.
Great food, yes.
Always a plus.
It's going to be a spectacular evening.
Before we let you go, I want to give you a chance to talk quickly about a couple of other things, just ongoing exhibits at the museum and something new that'll be coming up, I believe, in the summer. My eyes lit up when I saw on your website one of your exhibits called, I think, Blessings to Blenders. Explain to our listeners what that's about.
Okay, this is an exhibit, a feature that we were able to open at the end of November last year. It runs through October 31st of this year. Sponsored in part by the Racine Community Foundation and S.C. Johnson, and it features a rarely seen privately held collection. It's its first and only time in the Racine community of work done by Alfonso Iannelli, who was a significant modernist designer in the 20th century. He was designing posters somewhere off on the West Coast when he met Frank Lloyd Wright. Frank Lloyd Wright brought him to Chicago. He designed the sprites for the Midway Gardens, and after a falling out with Wright, like everybody had, went on to a heck of a design career. Did things like for the Prudential Building, did that rock logo, the Gibraltar logo on the building. Did a variety of liturgical works as well around the country, and you know, again, indicative of the sort of innovative spirit of this community, this modernist designer was brought in for several different projects, including St. Thomas Aquinas High School, which is now St. Catherine's and St. Patrick's Church, where he worked with the architect Barry Byrne. Alfonso Iannelli created the altars, developed the altars and the sculptures, some of the other architectural features of the building. And the stained glass windows, and we're very fortunate to have original charcoal. They're called cartoons, but they're these full-size charcoal and Conte crayon drawings that were the patterns for the St. Patrick's stained glass windows. Also designs he was picked up by the Oster Company, and he designed products for them, and then even had some proposals for Horlick that never materialized into anything, but we're very fortunate to have that collection. That comes to us from a few people that, including Tim Samuelson, who's the cultural historian for the city of Chicago. You interviewed him last year.
You sure did.
And he was the one who worked with us to curate this collection, as well as my good friend David Jamieson and Eric O'Malley of Prairie Mod.
And you have him coming for something, for a special event.
Yes, we do. On May 22nd, it's a Wednesday. He's going to come and give a talk on Alfonso Iannelli at St. Patrick's Church. It's part of the museum's annual membership meeting, but we're opening it up to the public. We'd really like to get people in to see and understand a little bit about the amazing artist and artistry that Iannelli brought to this community. And St. Patrick's is such a beautiful place. It'd just be really kind of cool to get people in there and learn a little bit more about him.
Absolutely. And then quickly tell our listeners about this brand new exhibit that will be opening in the summer that shows us, among other things, that famous pocket fisherman that we remember from TV commercials.
This is Popeil. Yeah, this is another... this is another part of the partnership that we've been enjoying with Tim and the Chicago Cultural Center. He's got a collection of Ronco stuff, this material and Popeil that we all kind of grew up with. This is just this Ron Popeil was just the master salesman of the 20th century, and anybody who is 30 years or older remembers commercials of people demonstrating, like you said, pocket fisherman, the Vegematic, Blendomatic. I always go right back to Dan Aykroyd's spoof with the Bassomatic.
Yeah.
But then the commercials always ended with, it makes a great Christmas gift. And while it's not a strictly local story, it is a part of our shared experience. And I just think it's going to be fun to have this stuff here. That opens the first Friday in August, and that opening is free to the public. It's going to be part of the Racine Downtown First Fridays program.
Very fun. When is the museum open?
Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 10 to 3, and Sunday, 12 to 4.
Very good. And if people are interested in seeking out more information and or purchasing tickets for the big event on April 27th, what do they do?
You contact us anytime. You can visit our website, RacineHeritageMuseum.org. There's a link to email us or call 262-636-3926.
Very good. And that, again, the swinging into spring major fundraiser for the Racine Heritage Museum will be on April 27th. Jim, are you going to be in costume that night?
I will.
Okay.
My OD greens will have on, and we'll be walking around and probably selling raffle tickets. I'm relegated to doing that.
So I imagine.
Glad it's going to be period specific.
Right. Very good. Well, it sounds like a wonderful night and for a great, great cause, namely to ensure the further operation and flourishing of the Racine Heritage Museum, such a treasure in the Racine community. Chris Paulson is it?
Yep. Just want to thank you very, very much and WGTD for giving us the opportunity to spread the word. Thank you so much.
That's why we're here. Chris Paulson is the executive director. Jim Wardrop, one of the hardworking volunteers there at the Racine Heritage Museum. Great to talk to both of you today.
Thanks very much for having us.
And part two of today's morning show is coming up in a moment here on WGTD. And this beautiful music is by the great German composer Franz Schubert. And this past weekend, I had the pleasure of performing his great song cycle, Die Winterreise, Winter's Journey. And this coming weekend, you can experience another side to Schubert, which is not always as talked about, that Schubert was also a composer of marvelous choral music. And so this weekend, there are going to be performances of his Mass in G major. And here with us in the studios to talk about that is Dr. James Kinchin, Director of Choral Activities at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And we're going to be talking not only about performances of the Schubert Mass in G this coming weekend, but performances of the Forêt Requiem the following weekend that Dr. Kinchin is also conducting. So this is a busy time. And Dr. Kinchin, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Well, thank you so much, Greg. It's a pleasure, as always, to be here.
So we should say that these performances that are coming up are, I should say, especially exciting in that they involve collaboration between some of your Parkside singers and with some outstanding high school singers in the area. And I think you've done this kind of thing before. Explain. Why well, this is such a rich and exciting opportunity.
This is a part of the series we call Experiencing Choral Treasures, that we're in a third year now of doing it. And it gives us the opportunity, as you said, to invite some of our really wonderful high school choral colleagues to campus and to collaborate with them in the performance of shortish to mid-length major work with orchestra. And so we continue that. And I have to say this because as I was driving up, I was thinking, okay, you got to make sure that do you make it clear it's not the weekend, because everything happens on the weekend with performance. But this is an exception. Both of the performances, they're both Mondays
evening, that's right, performances. I actually knew that because one of your adult singers is in my church choir and made a point of saying that. So, just past the weekend.
Right. But the Shubert will be sung on Monday, April 8th. It will be in Bedford Concert Hall on our campus, and that performance will commence at 7 p.m. And we are just delighted to have as our special guest the Tremper High School Chorale.
I've heard of them.
You've heard of them, I'll bet. Yes, under the fabulous direction of my friend and colleague Polly Amborn. And they're going to be sharing that Shubert performance with us, and we're just really, really excited about that.
Right. And then the Foray Requiem follows right after that.
It comes the next week.
Go ahead.
Monday, April 15th. And the one thing I want to make sure I say is that unlike just about every performance that we do these days, and certainly the Experiencing Choral Treasures performances, the April 15th performance is not on our campus. That is being done in the Siena Center in Racine.
Hmm. So do you usually pile things up like this, one big work and then another big work a week later? Is that common?
That is not common. That is not common at all. And it sort of happened as a result basically of us trying to sort of fit everything into our internal calendar. And then when we invite groups to collaborate with us, they come with their own calendars. And so this is just how the stars lined up on this. But we're happy. I mean, we can't think of a better alignment than to do Shubert one weekend and then to follow with Foray.
Right. And so as far as Parkside is concerned, is it the same singers in both of those performances, or is it two different groups from Parkside?
Well, so yes and no. So I'll have to explain both of those responses. The group that's sort of the consistent nexus for both performances is the UW Parkside Master Singers. Mm-hmm. That's our campus community group. Joining them in the first performance, the Shubert performance, will be University Chorale.
Okay.
In the second performance that we're doing, which is the Foray, they will be joined by Voices of Parkside. And I have to say, I have a very special guest. I want to make sure that I let you know and the listeners know that in the Foray performance, we are joined by the Union Grove High School Chamber Choir. And they are under the direction of a really exciting young man, Rob Cruz.
Very good. So these collaborations are exciting. And I know from my work at Carthage and the Carthage Choir having collaborated in kind of a similar fashion that, I mean, I've seen up close and personal how exciting this can be and how the excitement runs in both directions.
Yes,
I mean, it's not just this jaw-dropping, eye-opening experience for the high school singers to be up on risers with college singers, but really, the pleasure goes in both directions,
yes,
and the excitement.
Yes, it does. And so we're happy that there is that kind of reciprocation. One of the things that I said in notes that will appear in the program, talking about the university's strong commitment to service and how we have found this particular niche very pleasant, very propitious niche. But the idea is that there's always something to give and there's always something to get. It goes both ways. And so we are certainly excited to have those young people with all of their energy and all of their enthusiasm on campus and to be able to have them as collaborators in these performances.
Wonderful. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. James Kinchin from the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, the Director of Choral Activities there, presiding over two exciting performances this coming Monday night, the Shubert Mass in G with the Tremper High School Chorale, which is led by Polly Amborn, and the following Monday, Foray's Requiem with the Chamber Choir?
Choir, yes.
From Union Grove High School. Rob Cruz is their director. So let's talk first of all about the Shubert Mass in G and then play a second excerpt from it. We heard a little bit of the Kyrie that opens this beautiful work. What do you want to say to our listeners about the Schubert Mass in G, one of a number of Mass settings by Schubert?
Yeah, well, you know, gosh, there's so much to be said. For one thing, people should know that this Mass setting was one that he did. And I was telling the high school students at Tremper about this, and somebody said, boy, he was sick, wasn't he? That he wrote this Mass at the age of 18. It was not his first Mass. It was his second Mass. And he interrupted writing his first symphony to write this Mass, which he composed in less than a week. So already we see that genius coming to the fore. He's still a teenager.
Right. You know, 2 years ago, my faculty recital in the fall was art songs by Schubert composed when he was a teenager, and some of his greatest songs were written when he was a young teenager. Yeah. Some of them written when he was younger than any student at Carthage. I called that recital "Boy Wonder."
Boy, yeah. That's a great title.
So anyway, and this is another side of the Boy Wonder and the great things that he did at such a tender age.
And it's amazing how all of those things that make for the Schubertian style had come together at such a young age for him.
Yeah. Incredible.
And one of the things is a hallmark of his writing, and you know, having sung his music, is his just incredible gift for melody. And we hear that obviously in his Lieder, but we also hear that in something like this Mass, where there's one beautiful, tuneful moment after another.
Absolutely. And of course, it's a very singable work, not to overstate the fact that it's simple to sing, but there is a simplicity to it that makes it accessible for singers, and it seems to me for audiences as well.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, and part of that, of course, is just, I think, is just the aesthetic of Schubert. But it's also greatly informed by the fact that he is coming out of, and in a sense, transitional from classicism, from Viennese classicism. And so he brings forth some of the values and procedures of people like Haydn and Mozart, particularly in his writing, where there is a real importance attached to form and to organization and to having things sort of fit within structure. And that helps to contribute, I think, to the simplicity that you're talking about.
Right. So let's play something else from the Schubert Mass in G, and what would you suggest?
Well, I tell you, I'm a sucker for the whole thing. let's do at least a portion of the Benedictus. It is a trio, soprano, tenor, and bass, and it's just really one of the most beautiful moments, not just in this Mass, but one of the most beautiful moments for a solo ensemble in music.
I couldn't agree more. So here it is, the Benedictus from the Schubert Mass in G major.
Thank you.
magnificent music of Schubert and from his Mass in G Major. And again, this Monday night at Francis Bedford Hall, such a beautiful space for performance at Parkside. It will be a performance with Parkside singers joined by the Tremper Chorale, the Mass in G of Schubert.
And with orchestra.
Yeah, and it's beautiful what Schubert does in that respect as well. So what an exciting opportunity for people to hear this treasurable masterpiece again. And then the following Monday night, and this time at the Siena Center on the north side of Racine, another beautiful space for making music, another beautiful work, the Requiem of Fauré.
Yes.
I wish we had longer to talk about the Fauré Requiem. What would your brief words be about the special beauty and majesty of this piece?
That it is for me a very bright and airy and optimistic work compared to other Requiem settings. When someone asked Fauré why he wrote this piece, basically his answer, which is an interesting answer for one composing a Requiem, was he wrote it for the pleasure of it.
Ah.
And that he wanted to write something in that genre that was as gentle as he himself was. And I think he absolutely succeeded. And we do it in its original version, which dates, I think, to 1893. When he first did it, he did it at the Madeleine, where he was the organist. And it's a more chamber kind of approach, dark, rich colors in the strings, because only violas and cellos are playing. There's a solo violin, but that's only in two movements. And so this predates by a couple of decades the kind of bigger symphonic version of this that was later done. But this is his original statement, and it is consoling and comforting and just optimistic in all of those ways that it can be.
Yeah, it's a very sublime work. Yes. The recording I happen to have, conducted by John Rutter, is of that 1893 version, and this is really the way to hear this.
Yes.
So what movement should we listen to entice people to hear all of the Fauré Requiem?
Oh, gosh. let's listen to the Liberame.
Ah, okay. So this begins with a dramatic baritone solo, and then the choir comes in, and of course with some music there that's actually pretty foreboding and powerful.
Right, and in this movement is as close as he gets to a real Dies Irae, that moment of dread and doom.
Right.
But he doesn't play on that a whole lot.
Here it is, the Liberame from the Fauré Requiem. I'm going to shift to a different... Magnificent music of Gabriel Fauré from his Libera Me. And so this is a performance now a week from Monday night,
yes.
Again with some of your Parkside singers and orchestra,
yes.
And a choir from Union Grove,
yes.
High School. Have you had a chance to even put this together with the Union Grove musicians, or have you had a chance to sit with them yet, or is that
yet
to come?
I have had an opportunity to visit with them in rehearsal. And share artistic vision. They're just wonderful folk to work with, very receptive and very eager to make music, very open to the ideas that I want to bring. So, yes, I have. And I told Rob not to turn his head, else I might load all of them up in my car and take them back to campus. It was such a joy working with them.
Very good. So, again, we have these two performances, Mass in G Major of Schubert this coming Monday night and Fauré Requiem the following Monday night. If people are interested in more information and or to purchase tickets, what do they do?
Well, for the first performance, the Schubert performance, they can go online, uwp.edu, and get at it that way, or call the campus to get information particularly from the campus box office. In the case of the second performance, they should call the Siena Center, and I apologize, I don't have that number handy, but the Siena Center desk, information desk, will give them the information. And by the way, the Siena Center performance is at 7:30. Bedford Hall Schubert is at 7 p.m.
Very good.
7:30 for the foray.
We don't want anybody late for either of these.
No.
And Dr. James Kinchin will be on the podium leading these musicians in both of these choral masterworks. Dr. Kinchin, great to have you here on the morning show, as always, to hear you speak so eloquently about great music. And thank you for being part of the morning show
today.
Thank
you for having me, Greg.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, welcoming approximately 150 full-time transfer students each year. Eligible Gateway graduates can receive guaranteed admission to Carthage to complete their bachelor's degrees. Transfer to more personalized education in 4 easy steps. More information about admissions and competitive scholarships for transfers available at carthage.edu/admissions.